For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Jeff, let's move into today's 5 at 5, then, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. And from women's basketball, we'll go to the men who lost last night to Arkansas. So, Jeff, 9 years into the Mark Fox era, where are we?
Well, Georgia, unfortunately, is oh so close to being 500 in the league, but that was a tough loss last night. And obviously, Chris, this is where I just hate the timing of this SEC Big 12, don't you? It's like, boy, you just want to get right back out there and make things right in the league, but now the Dogs have got to wait another week to do it. And Georgia's just in a spot where the Dogs have got to pull out all the stops and play themselves into the tournament. I think the big key right now, and listen, it's easy for us to say here, is just to really zero in on the guys that you think are your 6, 7, 8 best players, regardless of class, and just try and ride that train the rest of the way, because it is a daunting schedule the rest of the way. But this team is clearly capable. I mean, you look at the wins they've posted this year, and, you know, Georgia was 3 halves ago. Georgia was winning at Auburn by 14 points at halftime.
Yeah, that was pretty quickly erased.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn's got a great team. And then, last night it was a golden opportunity to get back to 500 in the league. And that's why that's always so tough when you're one below. Oh, and you lose a heartbreaker because you're thinking, what if?
Yeah. It's an interesting spot, because when you think, I mean, historically, Georgia, I believe the only school in the SEC that has an all-time worst winning percentage than Georgia does is Ole Miss.
I think that's correct.
So Georgia's basically one of the worst basketball programs in the history of the league. And
I just want to point it, like, before Coach Durham got here, we had had a losing record in 23 of the previous 27 seasons and had never made the postseason,
sure,
just for example.
So, you know, Coach Fox's winning percentage here is actually does exceed the all-time winning percentage of the school. I mean, he's done a good job. I mean, Georgia, as we know, could be way, way worse in basketball. But you just come to a point of, but have we gone as far as we can go now? Because after 9 years, does anyone suddenly think that, yeah, well, you know, give him some time and he's going to turn this into a powerhouse program?
Well, I think a lot of the pressure is built, too, because Yonte Maton is such a great player. And listen, there's some very good young players in this program. I'm telling you, Nick Claxton and Rayshon Hammonds, these guys have all SEC potential capabilities by the time their career is done. You know, when you look at what George is doing in recruiting, and obviously Jonas Hayes, who at some point will be the head coach at Georgia, and he'll be fantastic. I think he could do what Kirby's done, what Joni Taylor has done here. And, you know, whenever the time comes, I think he would be at the top of the list, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or sooner than that. But there's some very good young players coming into the program as well. And, you know, just to be so close, I know it's frustrating. And these last 10 SEC games are going to be extremely important, Chris. And you know, kind of like we said in that first hour, just the league has gotten so much better. Just you look at the level of coaching that's come into the conference.
And it's just the problem is Georgia just appears to have kind of flatlined, just stayed the same. Like, we're static right now.
I think if there's one year that was probably the most frustrating, I guess it would have been, was it 2 seasons ago when we had Gaines and Mann back for their senior years and that team didn't make the tournament? That was a one, I think. You know, and again, it's a deal here. A 1-point game here and a 2-point game there, you win one or two of those, you're in. That's just that fine line you walk. But I think that's the one probably that Coach Fox would tell you, golly, if there was one team where if we just could have gotten another break, we could have gotten in there and done some damage, that would be it. But there's a lot of work to do. The good thing is Georgia's got one of the best front lines in the SEC. I just think the big key is figuring out what the Dogs are going to do in the backcourt. And in my opinion, I would just kind of settle in on, not saying that they're not doing it now, but it's kind of, you know, it's kind of that time now to rock and roll the rest of the way with who you think your best six, seven guys are, and have those players play a vast majority of the minutes.
Yeah.
That's, you know, from the cheap seats, that's my view.
Yeah, but over the last couple of games, there's been actually quite a bit of a difference in the distribution of the minutes and everything, where, again, like Hightower starts two games in a row, and then last night played like 5 minutes, and then Crump completely disappeared. He didn't even play. So, you know, Maiden's going to play.
He's a great player.
Yeah.
He's one of the best that's ever played at Georgia. And I'm telling you, Chris Hammonds and Claxton, those guys are big-time freshman talents. And Derek Ogbede is a really good power forward. I mean, this is one of the best front lines in the SEC. A lot of this is going to come down to just getting the guard play solidified. So this is going to be a very important stretch. And this Kansas State game really doesn't mean a ton, but it would be nice to get a win just to get the guys to get some confidence back.
Yeah, I mean, it's – you know, if Georgia finishes, can somehow get above 500 in the league and finish up there, then, yeah, winning at Kansas State's going to probably get them in there. But losing at Kansas State isn't going to do anything to damage their tournament hopes any more than losing last night at home to Arkansas did for a Hawks team that had not won a game on the road this season. Ends up surviving last night in double overtime.
And that was a big win for Arkansas. That got them to 500.
Yeah, because Georgia and Arkansas basically had the same record going into Arkansas had one more win overall, and they had the same conference record. So that moves the Woo Pig Suey up over Georgia. Moving on in today's 5 at 5, Jeff, a look at the Super Bowl a week and a half from now. You know, the Patriots have decided that they're going to wear white in the Super Bowl. I guess it was their choice, but they are going to wear their road whites because they're 3-0. All time in the Super Bowl, wearing the road whites. Jeff, are they a lock to win now?
I wish we could have worn the whites.
Yeah, I like our road whites.
Back on January 8th, you kind of feel like you're that dog. We wore them against Auburn and wore them against Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, maybe that should have been the – like, I know we're the 3 seed, but we're actually the underdog in this game, so right. We'll let Alabama wear the crimson tops.
Yes.
But
the last 3 times they had beaten us, we were wearing red.
Yeah, well,
the 2 games in Athens in 2012.
So now it's 4 times in a row.
Yeah,
wearing red.
Twice of them, 2 of those obviously.
That's because we would have been wearing white, yeah, over there in 07.
Yeah.
Well, we beat them wearing red in was it 04? That
03.
03. Yeah. And they brought in Brody Croyle, and he was immediately re-injured.
He was re-injured indeed. Hey, it's their choice. Makes sense for the Pats to do it. So the Eagles will be in green.
I'm trying to think of, like, well, when would the Patriots
– do they rotate?
Does it alternate? I guess it alternates, yeah.
It must, AFC, NFC. But you know what, the Pats, they should wear the old John Hanna helmet and wear the red uniform tops. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Although the one Super Bowl they were in wearing those wasn't good.
No, that did not go because I think they wore red against the – because the Bears wore the white.
Did they wear the blue against the Packers? Not that that matters.
I think Green Bay was in green for that game.
All right. So they would have worn their – heck, I don't remember what they wore. But apparently they're
3-0. That was a forgettable Super Bowl too.
Yeah, well, Desmond Howard was the MVP.
Correct.
They're 3-0 wearing the white, so they're going to go to the white tops, and I guess everyone thinks they're a lock to win now based on their uniform color. Jeff, moving on in the 5-5 college football now. Other than Georgia, of course.
Yes.
What's a team out there that is this offseason is going to wear on for the next couple of months, unfortunately? What's a team next season that you are you're going to be most interested in other than the Dogs, which is obviously a given?
I think Texas can really make a jump. They remind me of Bama 07, Georgia 2016. I'm going to be interested to see what happens at UCLA with Chip Kelly,
yeah,
too.
I think that's my answer, is UCLA with Chip Kelly resurfacing now in college.
As far as the non-Power Five, which I believe is the Group of Five, you and I were in agreement. Boise looks like they might be the team that could kind of ascend back. And I think two other teams, because of what they did this past season, and again, I'm still just stunned, if you want to kind of go down the ladder some, that both Iowa State and Memphis have their coaches back. So can they kind of sustain now?
Yeah,
for a second year in a row.
Or is you know, like Matt Campbell, especially at Iowa State, is there going to be a deal where like maybe you should
window.
Yeah, maybe you should have gone while your stock was high.
Although he signed a big deal with them, so
sure, yeah. Same thing with Brohm, I guess, at Purdue.
What do you think Chris will learn out of Tennessee this year? Now, hey, if they go out there and go 9-3 and get a couple of big early SEC wins, that says something. Let's say realistically the Vols go, what would a number be for them? I was going to say if they go 6-6, is that a success for Jeremy Pruitt? I would think so.
Considering that they're a team right now that is sitting on a loss in its most recent game against all 13 other schools in the SEC, yeah, if they could carve out a 500 record, keeping in mind, too, that they do open with West Virginia in a game that they're currently a 7.5-point underdog.
And their first four SEC games are Gators, Dogs, Auburn, Bama.
Correct. And
two of them at home, two on the road.
Yeah. What are they? They go to Gainesville? No, they come here. They host Florida. They come here, and then they're at Auburn and host Bama, or maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah, it's a rugged start for them, and you know. And here's the thing, too. You know, and I think Missouri is going to be really good. I mean, the East has gotten a lot better. And again, going back to your deal, they've also lost their last two to Vandy, and they lost to Kentucky, and obviously South Carolina got them.
Yeah, talking about Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be bad.
I mean, is their max SEC win total 2? Could they beat Kentucky and Vandy? I don't want to jinx anything. I think we will beat them here. But I mean, is 2? I mean, unless, you know, here's the thing. Unless Garantano just, you know, becomes like a Cam Newton type player.
Or Juwan Jennings catches another Hail Mary.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, I mean, I can't see them winning more than 2 SEC games. They're Auburn, Georgia. They got to play on the road.
Right.
They go to South Carolina, and they got Vandy on the road. So Kentucky and Missouri are their home games.
You know, maybe they could beat Florida. It's early in the season.
Yeah.
Feeling it out. I mean,
the Gators weren't very good. But there's 100%, though. Florida has upgraded at head coach.
And Florida's got like 19 starters back, and they've got a hotshot recruit coming in at quarterback.
They're probably going to be better at quarterback.
Yes.
With Emory Jones. But Grantham is their defensive coordinator.
That's
points could be scored.
That's a good thing for the rest of the league.
But, yeah, I mean, then they open up. They play West Virginia and Charlotte. So the rest of their – I mean, all right, East Tennessee State, UTEP, and Charlotte.
They need to beat East Tennessee State.
And I believe –
that would be a bad loss.
I believe UTEP and Charlotte – neither one of those teams won a game this year, did they?
Oh, I don't know. Probably not. I know Charlotte was awful.
UTEP didn't win a game, and I think Charlotte went winless too, but
I know they were one of the 4 or 5 worst teams, so at best they were like 1-11.
Charlotte, they won one game by 1 point in overtime. They beat UAB, oddly enough.
Oh, that's a good
UAB
win.
Ended up in a bowl game.
Yeah.
So, all right, so their non-conference schedule next year is against the team that was 1-11 and 0-12, and then East Tennessee State plays.
So they'll win those 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're realistically probably looking at 5-7.
Yeah, no bowl for them.
I mean, unless they pull off an upset.
Yeah. I think they're going to be bad. And I know you like to tread lightly on that stuff because we play them. But I think they're going to be bad. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's going to work out there.
It was a bold move. This whole thing is,
yeah,
it's the stuff for a 30 for 30.
Jeff, in about an hour, the results of this year's Baseball Hall of Fame election will be revealed, and it would appear, based on some early returns, there are going to be a bunch of guys that get in. Vlad Guerrero.
Yes.
Trevor Hoffman.
Yeah.
Larry Jones.
Yes.
Edgar Martinez.
Yeah.
And I believe – oh, and then Jim Thome, another first ballot guy. So it looks like 5 guys are going to get in.
Yeah.
You're okay with all 5 of those? Or?
No.
The Edgar Martinez one is he's just one of those guys where this is his ninth year on the ballot. I mean, so it's the whole process. That's where I think it's hokey to me. Like,
so now he's good now
all of a sudden he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't even the fact that he was a DH doesn't bother
me. It's a position.
Yeah. And had he played in the National League and been a terrible third baseman but hit the way he did, he'd be no one would question if he was going to go in the Hall of Fame, except for the fact that it's been 9 years, and why wasn't he in already if he's going in now?
You know, Tomey's one of those guys, like, yeah, his numbers say absolutely, but and, you know, I shouldn't knock the guy for basically staying healthy most of his career, but you know, he's just not a guy when I think of, like, even on those powerhouse Indians teams when he was young, he was what, like maybe the fifth or sixth best hitter. He wasn't as good as Manny. He wasn't as good as Albert Bell. He wasn't as good as Lofton. He wasn't as good as, what did they go, Baerga first, then Alomar? I'm trying to remember which way the second baseman went.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is Manny's second year on the ballot, but he's one of those guys that's barely getting any votes.
But it's so. Like Manny Ramirez was a much better hitter than Jim Tomey. I get the numbers Tomey had, so I guess Chipper, to me, should be on 100% of the ballots. I don't see any way how you couldn't see him as a Hall of Famer.
He's not going to be, but it looks like he's actually going to probably end up with on a higher percentage of ballots than either Maddox, Glavine, or Smoltz did.
Which, how was Maddox? But again, like Babe Ruth wasn't on 100%.
No, I mean,
Willie
no one
Mays
has been.
Wasn't.
Yeah. But, yeah, Chipper's definitely in, and I think Tomey – basically, I think all five of those guys are in. What I'm interested to see, like, Andrew Jones' vote total versus Omar Vizquel's, because both of those guys are –
shortstop and best center fielder.
Yeah. And, like, right now it looks like Omar Vizquel's going to get way more votes than Andrew Jones, which doesn't make any sense. Because you're only voting for Omar Vizquel based on his defense. And Andrew Jones – people always like to qualify it, and I guess they're afraid of, like – you know, baseball old-timers coming and beating them up. So it's, well, he was the best center fielder of his era. Andrew Jones was the best outfielder ever.
He's certainly one of the best center fielders that ever lived. The catches he made, the ground he covered.
Let me say defensive. I mean, need to put that in there.
Sure,
defensive outfielder,
sure.
Not just outfielder, period, ever. But there was no better defensive outfielder ever than Andrew Jones.
In my lifetime, for the guys I saw – you know, post DiMaggio, Mantle, and Mays, who would certainly be considered the three best ever. The only guy I thought that was in Andrews' league defensively was Jim Edmonds.
And my case with Edmonds is those catches that Edmonds made where he was diving and doing 360s, you didn't see that out of Andrew because he was just floating over to the ball and catching it routinely.
He was, I would think in my lifetime, and again, I saw the Braves a lot more, the best – just great defenders that I saw in my life. Again, this is post Mays and Mantle and DiMaggio and all, were Ozzie Smith and Andrew Jones.
You know that catch Willie Mays made in the World Series?
Over the shoulder.
Where he was running over the shoulder?
Wirtz, yes.
Andrew Jones would have glided under that thing and just caught it like a normal person.
What about behind his back?
Yeah, he would have caught it in his mouth.
I mean, but
Willie Mays had to make it look hard.
So with Vizquel, who I think you could make an argument – is the best defensive shortstop since Smith.
But right.
For whatever reason, that shortstop carries a little bit higher gravitas when it comes to the voters in center field.
But then Andrew was a better hitter.
Oh, by far. Because even Andrew never was a great hitter. And I think one thing, he came up at the same time with like Guerrero and Todd Helton. So, all right, these are the three. And Guerrero and Todd Helton were much better consistent hitters, but Andrew did have pop. He could hit home runs. He was never going to hit for a great average, but the guy saved a lot more runs and would hit home runs also.
Yeah, I mean, he led the league 1 year with 51.
Right. I mean, and how many RBIs did he have at his glove? I mean, I absolutely think he can make a case for Andrew Jones.
But the other guy I want to see it compared to, too, because there were some early ballots, there were guys voting for Johnny Damon and not Andrew Jones.
What?
And that would be one of those, here's a guy that played for the Red Sox that's going to get Hall of Fame votes.
Yeah,
and
Johnny Damon's not a Hall of Famer. Come on.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. No, 100% he's not. Yeah. But I just want to if he ends up getting more appearing on more ballots than Andrew Jones does, then there's some other voters that need to be fired from voting.
But it's also a thing that, you know, and I get it with everything. I'm not saying Tomey doesn't deserve it, but, like, Manny Ramirez was much better than Jim Tomey.
Yeah.
Would anybody even debate that?
Some people might, but –
I mean, nobody who really. I'm like, don't just look at them. Guys who, you know, ask pitchers who they would rather pitch.
Yeah,
to.
Manny was. I love. He was one of the best.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like I remember we had one day. I think Dave was in here too. Something came up about great running backs of the NFL, and it might have even been Tech fan Eric. We're like, well, Tony Dorsett's the best running back in Cowboys history. So, well, what about it? No. It's Dorsett. If you saw him play, Dorsett. And so to me, that's like Manny. I don't know who had better career numbers, but Manny was way better than Tomei.
I'm sure, but by volume now, Tomei did, just by playing longer.
But again, who would you rather?
You know what I'm going to break out next? Defensive war.
Is there such a thing?
Oh, yeah. And that's where Andrew really is. Like, by that objective measure, is far and away the best defensive outfielder in the history of the game.
He's definitely the best one of our lifetime. Best center fielder of our lifetime.
All those fancy catches Ken Griffey and Jim Edmonds and Willie Mays made, Andrew didn't make those because he just was da-da-la-di-da-di-da-di-da.
That is, by the way, one of the things that back in the day they said about DiMaggio, that he rarely made great catches, that he had
He just went over there.
Instincts.
Yeah.
He knew where to be. But, no, Andrew, and he was so much fun to watch, too.
Yeah, and that's the thing, even as a hitter, to me, he was sort of like must-see. When he came to the plate, you had to watch.
Had some great answers in the Gold Club trial,
too.
Yeah,
he did. All right, there's your 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Yeah, we'll.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.